Good afternoon, everybody. This is Mike Johnson from PCI Midwest. And today's podcast, we will be featuring Joe Bunkers from Gage Brothers Precast and Steve Berg and Dan Hottinger from BWBR Architects. Joe, why don't you give us a little introduction about yourself?
Sounds great. Thanks, Mike. So my name's Joe Bunkers. I've been with Gage Brothers for 19 years. Started here in drafting and then moved up through quality control, now in charge of sales and marketing. And really excited to have on the line with us today a couple of our favorite architects from up in Minneapolis with BWBR. We've got Steve and Dan. And Steve, why don't you give us a little bit about yourself today?
Sure. Thanks, Joe. My name is Steve Berg with BWBR Architects. I'm a project architect and design lead. I've been with the firm for over 10 years now and happy to share some stories about precast for the Minnesota Senate building. Dan?
Hi, I'm Dan Hottinger. I've been with BWBR for 20 years. I am a project manager and a construction project manager, and I also head up our technical quality assurance program here.
Thanks, guys. And Dan, I don't know that we've had the privilege of meeting in person, so nice to meet you via podcast today.
Thank you.
So like you mentioned, yeah, good. Well, we hear you're the one who's excited about doing these, so we're happy for that. So specifically, we wanted to start talking today about the Senate office building in St. Paul. And I thought maybe I'd offer you guys the opportunity to tell me a little bit about the design, maybe how you got the design, what some of the challenges were with the design.
I'll lead off, I guess. We were honored to be selected to design the Minnesota Senate building for the state. It's a building that houses all 67 of the senators and has large hearing rooms and is a really public open building for the entire state and community. And it had some fairly big challenges right from the beginning. Probably the biggest would be schedule and how do we design a building, a 100-year structure, in a time frame that met the legislative process for the state? And that, along with several other factors, led pretty quickly to a decision to move to a precast envelope for the entire building, precast and, of course, curtain wall system. It met not only the timing, but we were looking for a timeless structure as well. So the project site sits right next to the state capitol, and we really wanted to honor the state capitol form and have this building just be a nice complement to it, deferential to the state capitol building. So we looked to a stone clad and precast clad envelope right off the bat for part of the form. Dan, any other factors about the process or the workshop?
Well, the speed factor was one of the biggest items for us. We needed to be able to have something that would achieve all of the design goals that the design leads had for the project, a timeless quality, a very distinctive look, the ability to be able to change the facade as we went from side to side of the building, from a stone to maybe the back of the house could be something that was complementary, but a little more budget friendly. And then in order to make the accelerated timetable, we also needed something that was relatively easy to put up, easy to tilt into place, could be manufactured off-site, simply brought to the site and then tilted up in place.
As far as the materials and the selection, I guess this building really is built from the inside out. And there's a series of horizontal datums that that mark the building with either wood paneling on the interior all the way to the exterior reveals and the details on the outside of the building. That was a key driver to the design to create the look and aesthetic. And it really worked well. Precast worked extremely well to achieve that design goal right off the bat. So perhaps, Joe, we could talk a little bit about the form of the building and how we selected some of the materials. The southern facade is a large arc. Each one of those panels and window panels is segmented and has a framed view directly to the Capitol. That facade obviously took was a very prominent feature that we studied, and the CAP board, or the Capital Area Planning Board, requires any structure that is in this district to be stone clad. So that was a initial factor that we looked at, and we worked with Vedder and Gage to select the right mix, the right color of stone that would complement the Capitol, but also be unique to this building. Any other features?
Then I think, Dan, that there are some back of the house areas where perhaps stone wasn't used. If my memory serves me right, we did a buff colored precast on a couple elements and some charcoal colored precast in the back of the house to emulate stone without the added cost of stone where it wasn't needed.
Yes, where we had the limestone, it was really important to be able to match to the limestone as close as possible. The limestone had a kind of a, what was selected was a gray patina to the limestone itself. So we had to very carefully make sure that the mix was correct. We were trying to match a dark stone along the bottom. So the gray tones that we put for that, along with the acid etch and the sandblast, kind of lent themselves to make it more stone-like, so that if you were driving along the backside of the building, it wasn't glaringly obvious that it wasn't stone clad, but it still continued the look all the way around the building, even on the non-public side, if you will.
I think we were really, really happy with the blend. And in part that occurred through the design process with Mortensen and Gage, as far as building a rather large mock-up panel. How large was it, Dan?
It was two stories tall. It was about
30.
I think the panels that showed up were like 15 by 30. So, and with that mock-up, it allowed us to have both stone and precast right next to each other. It allowed us to install curtain wall. We put the cornice pieces on, we put the cap flashings on. It allowed us to test out a bunch of different colors of the right down to caulking and the sealant and any kind of mortar that was used on it as well.
I really think that was a success story, because it allowed us to in real time go through and make little finesses, little tweak to how much is sandblasted to get that right mix, that right blend that matches. We're looking at a image of the building up on the screen that blends really nicely with the variegation of gray to warm tones of the limestone on the south facade. We're also very careful about the transition of the materials. So there's a arcing stone wall that serves as a backdrop, and that provided the termination between stone-clad precast panels and the sandblasted panels. So there was a void space where we didn't have materials touching directly to one another. And I'm not sure that anyone really, we certainly haven't heard comments that people even noticed the difference, frankly, between the stone clad and the precast. So
no, from the proverbial 20-foot view, right, it's almost indistinguishable from a distance. So the blend worked out really nice. And to back up to the mock-up process, I mean, we were able to do things like, say, can we do a light, a medium, and a heavy sandblast right next to the stone just to see what looked best and what worked out, which allowed us to kind of hone in on the colors that we needed.
I was just going to say, I'd add that oftentimes I feel like the mock-up process is maybe overlooked, where we just want to send a 4x4 out or something to that effect, where some of our most successful jobs, and certainly this one and others we've done with BWBR, we actually do a more full-scale mock-up where we can really try some things out, especially when we have a tight timeline, like you guys mentioned.
And that's exactly what I was going to reiterate. If we didn't have that extensive of a mock-up and we saw that there was a color issue on the site, we wouldn't have time to make those corrections. So it was extremely valuable, a great partnership amongst all going on site and looking at that. And what I was just going to touch on is it allowed us to make even fine-tuned details about those very important reveal lines and how do we match those throughout the facade and transitions between the granite, the gray tone, and the buff tone precast, all of those were resolved. So we had extreme confidence when it came to panels arriving to the site, and they were going up seamlessly.
And it also gave us buy-in from all of the stakeholders in the project, from the design builder to Gage to the design group within BWBR, all the way to bringing out the Senate staff and senators themselves to take a look at to set expectations and to make sure that everybody agreed and knew what it was going to look like up front. This allowed us to just, once it was approved, just get going.
So Dan, go ahead.
Oh, I'll just add too that our partners with Picard Chilton, design architect with BWBR, they were right with us along every step of the way, selecting materials, going to the mock-up, reviewing these things. So they were key in this entire process throughout the design.
Yeah, well put. I was going to ask Dan, I read in your bio online that the devil's in the details and you love the details. So I was going to ask the question, what was the hardest detail for this job to get just right?
The hardest details were actually at the front of the curved facade that Steve was describing is a rooftop deck, but it's also it's the rooftop deck above the parking garage, but it's a green space, kind of a really large patio, if you will. And making sure that we had the base detail correct so that we could have the green roof deck terminate into the base of the wall and still have a solid solution was challenging, but it worked in the end. And being able to go through the mock-up process and actually being able to sit in the room with Mortensen and BWBR and Gage, and we had about a 120-inch smart board, and we would just hack at that detail for an hour, and then we would come to something that everybody agreed on. The enclosure consultant would approve, and again, once we had that figured out, we could get going. We're off to the races again. And that process was not only for that base. I mean, we did it pretty much everywhere. We did it at the terminations, at the corners, at the window jams, the insulation solution, and the attachment of the windows to the precast. We were able to sit down and go through everything up front, make sure that everybody was on board with the solution, and then go into production, which made erecting the facade that much faster and easier.
I looked before we got on, and we have done 39 jobs together, Gage Brothers and BWBR, in our history. And one of the aspects that I believe make us so successful is what you just touched on, Dan, is that we get together in a room as a team. Everyone has input to work out the right detail for the right solution. And certainly that was what we did on this job and what we do on most jobs. So I think that's a very good point.
Right. That collaboration is key to the success of any project. And the Senate building, certainly we're very proud of that partnership amongst everyone. And agree, I would concur that the collaboration with Gage Brothers and BWBR has been a really positive experience. I've worked on a handful of projects together and very proud of the work that we've achieved together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Appreciate those kind words, and definitely we enjoyed as well. I want to switch gears a little bit. Steve, you mentioned in the introduction that this was designed to be a 100-year building. To the layperson, what does that mean? And how do you guys look at a job differently with that goal in mind?
Well, just starting with the site alone, situating any structure this close to a historic, the Capitol building, this building needs to have a timeless quality about it. It needs to be sustainable as far as energy efficiency, the life cycle cost of materials, the longevity, both exterior and interior. Those are just a handful of factors that we consider when it's a 100-year building. But more specifically, the details of the wall construction, typically the state would look to a traditional cavity wall system. And it was for the Senate building going to precast with the spray foam back insulation. We had to do a lot of analysis to validate the energy efficiency, how water infiltration, what happens at all of the control joints. Those were critically reviewed to validate that this truly is a 100-year-plus building. And the results, when we did the analysis and we went through all of that time and time again, proved out to be the right system for this project. Now, Dan, any other thoughts?
Well, you know, it's also going to be the durability of the products that we use. And obviously, a cavity wall system, while great for a shopping mall, is not a solution that is always a 100-year solution for a building such as this. The durable goods like concrete, the stone, the glass, things like that, we're really looking for something that the exterior facade, for all intents and purposes, 75 to 100 years from now, will look as good or at least look good while weathered as it did when it was new.
Obviously, we want to be mindful of the dollars, the investment that the state made for this building. And that's really what it's all about, a legacy building that lasts and performs well.
I notice also that this building has reached a B3 benchmarking. Can you tell me a little bit about what that means and how that fits into the overall design for you as well?
B3 is this, for all intents and purposes, it's the state of Minnesota's version of LEED. So it's buildings benchmarking and beyond. And what it is it's a series of strategies that you can use to make the building more sustainable, all the way from energy savings to the way the building is sited, to the way that the amount of recycled content that goes into the building. Here again, obviously, by using some of the durable goods such as stone and concrete and right down to the amount of fly ash that's in the concrete mix, can lend itself to the B3 standard and sustainability score. This building, one of the project goals was to make sure it was a sustainable building. You know, it's a public building. We want to make sure that we are good stewards of the environment and that the building itself not only looks good, but it meets the sustainability goals that we wanted. It was actually, I think it was a 37% savings for the cubic foot, I'm sorry, the BTUs per square foot. And the strategies that we used to kind of get to the energy savings included, a link to the St. Paul District Energy for heating. We had 4 inches of spray foam insulation applied to the backside of the precast. But the way that the insulation is put on in lifts in most areas, we actually have about 5. So the foam so the thermal loss through the panels is minimal because of the insulation. And what allowed us to use that insulating solution on the backside of the panels is, as Steve said, we modeled and tested and, went to great lengths to do that. We even went so far as to fully insulate and enclose the mock-up and then go out there with a thermal camera and do thermal testing in that manner as well to see which solution worked the best around the perimeter of the windows. You know, there's LED lighting throughout the facility. There's an air handling unit system that utilizes fan wall units that we did to conserve energy by running only the fans needed to provide the necessary volume of air and a number of different strategies like that.
Excellent. Thank you. I have one final question, then I'll turn it over if you guys have any closing remarks. My final question is, what is one really cool feature that you can tell us about on this building that the average person would never know?
I got one. The one that I used to always point out when I was doing my tours is that the building is like an inverted mushroom. So it's 6 stories tall because we had to go 2 stories into the ground for underground parking, and that the parking structure underneath the building actually goes from property line to property line, just about. And then it narrows down and then comes up out of the ground to the building itself.
I was going there as well. The behind the scenes, I don't think you drive by this building, you approach the building, Very few people would know the extent of parking integrated beneath this terrace above, which sets the that's on the hearing room level. It brings it in alignment with the Capitol and just above the light rail. So it feels extremely peaceful when you're up there at that main level. The other thing I guess I would add is sort of in the planning of this to know sort of the behind the scenes approach behind the hearing rooms and the spaces that are directly linked to offices. There's a nice network of collaboration and collegiality behind those hearing rooms where senators discuss bills, and it's fascinating, the process and the planning for this. I think that's really interesting. But this building is open to the public, so they're really I would encourage anyone to come in. You can walk through the main door and up the stairs, and you're at that hearing room level and can navigate and meet your senators. This is a public facility for everyone to enjoy. So it's an incredible process, and nice to be a part of this team.
Very well put. Is there anything in closing you guys would like to add that we haven't covered already?
This is Mike again. I just have a couple things that I'd like people to understand or be aware of, is that you yourself, Joe, as well as Steve and Dan, are going to be able to provide links via V-cards on this podcast. So if people want to contact you guys to discuss this project further or possible other projects, that would be very possible as well. I think that this kind of project certainly leads to a lot of discussions, and and I've been by this project numerous times, and I wasn't aware of the mushroom effect as was stated. So I thought that was pretty interesting. So
well,
Joe, do you have anything else, or guys, do you have anything else you'd like to say before we wrap up here?
Well, I just want one of the things that I wanted to wrap up on is just the fact that I think what's sometimes lost in a project like this is the schedule. And I will admit that the first time I was shown the schedule when I was brought into the project team, I actually started laughing because I thought they were joking with me. It was really, really, really tight for a building of this size and scale. And on our way through the project, I found that the team, from every piece and part that was on the project, we were all so collaborative and worked so well together in the end, all looking to get to that one goal at the end, which was to hit the date that we had to hit. It was amazing how well everybody got along and worked together to figure out all of the solutions. It's something that you don't see on projects all the time, and it's a project that I will always look back on very fondly for that reason.
I would agree. I can't imagine a better partnership amongst all parties. We all were on a mission to deliver a beautiful, high-performing building in the time frame that was asked of us. And there was a commitment that I've never experienced before to deliver this, and something that you knew everyone, including those that were on-site working, doing the craftsmanship, you could feel the pride that everyone had on this project. It was remarkable.
Well, I don't think there's a better way to leave this podcast than to say pride. I mean, that's good old Minnesota pride, precast pride. So I think that's wonderful. Joe, any final last words?
No, I would just echo what Steve and Dan, you guys just said, and that jobs like this happened because we're partners and we're all committed to the same goal. And I'll just iterate one more time that we've done 39 jobs with you guys at BWBR, and we have enjoyed every one of them. And we so appreciate the way that you look to us and that we look to you, and we partner up on jobs and turn out just some beautiful work that meets the goals that we have.
Well put. All right, gentlemen. Well, thank you very much for your time today. This was a fantastic podcast, and I thank you guys for your time. Joe, Dan, Steve, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.